Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 119. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in once again for co-host David Todd as he enjoys the rest of his summer. Coming to an end pretty soon will be Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Monday to you, and what did you think about Cleveland finally getting over the hump and winning a championship on Sunday night?
Well, Dave, I was going to start this podcast off by saying something that will probably get me more hate mail than anything else I've ever said or written about, and it is, I'm happy for Cleveland. I am. You know what? It's good for that city to finally get a championship. I wasn't necessarily rooting for them. I didn't really have a rooting interest. But good on him. And LeBron James had arguably the best series anyone has ever played of all time, and he deserves it.
I found myself silently rooting for Golden State. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just you know, it's the whole Pittsburgh Cleveland thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't dislike LeBron James at all. I think he played an amazing series. I did find myself not glued to the TV though all seven games. I mean, let's face it, really Game 7 was the best of the bunch. Oh, yeah. The rest were, there were some snoozers mm-hmm. in there, but yeah, Cleveland has a chance. Yeah, of course, now Pittsburgh had a basketball team, it'd be different. but they don't, obviously. So it's cute to see them celebrate a championship, what will probably be the only sport that they're able to get one in for quite some time.
Were you listening to the police scanner last night? They almost stole a fire truck. They didn't, but that's crazy.
Yeah, ever since I've come across that website, mm-hmm. which you can go to, any major city and track their police scanners. You know, anytime anything newsworthy happens, you know, wherever it is, or sports related, after a championship, I always like to try to tune into those things because you really hear some entertaining stuff. Like the unfortunate shooting down in Orlando, you really get to hear kind of some firsthand, stuff before mm-hmm. it really hits the media and that kind of thing. So I've always been a fan of listening to scanners, for years, and I've got a, although I won't get them in this podcast, I've got a lot of great stories related to such such hobby. Let's see, what else do we got on this Monday morning? Of course, the Steelers wrapped up their mandatory mini camp last week. It's really going to be quiet, you know, as far as new stuff goes. We've got some things that we hope to fill in over the course of the next five and a half weeks or so. We're going to be, you know, going in depth look at the roster. We'll start with that a little bit later on in this podcast today by looking at defensive line. What else is out there for us to discuss before we hit that?
Well, I guess we'll kind of ease our way into this discussion today with some, I guess, lighter stuff. Bruce Arians was featured. I don't even remember what it was. Was it NFL Network?
It's HBO. It's that Bryant Gumbel thing
right.
show that they have. Real Life?
Yeah, I think so. And he was talking about just basically rehashing his time with Pittsburgh. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. It sounded like Tomlin had implied that he was going to come back, but then he says, you know, I can't get you the money, and the relationship kind of ended from there. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, according to Arians, this was an interview that he had with Andrea Kramer. The first line of discussion, I think, after the Steelers were, of course, eliminated from the playoffs by the Denver Broncos that season, was that Mike Tomlin told Bruce Arians, I'll get you your bread, mm-hmm. you know? Of course, Arians' contract was up after that season. The Steelers only normally do, what, 1 to 2 year contracts with members of their coaching staff. So even dating back then, that wasn't so unusual. But he told Arians, you know, apparently that he would get him his bread, and then, you know, not long after that, Tomlin had called Arians to inform him that things had changed, and basically says, "I can't get you the money. No, I can't get you a contract," basically. And Arians said, you know, asked in so many words, "Are you firing me?" It was a no. And, you know, basically Arians told Tomlin, "Hey, I'm going to save you a trip to come talk to me. You know, basically I'm being fired if you're not going to get me a new contract." And so, you know, that's how things came about. Of course, you know, if you remember back, the Steelers released a statement on their website saying that, you know, Arians had decided to, quote-unquote, retire, which I guess if you look at it, semantics, you know, that's really what Arians intended on doing, you know. But instead of saying we're not renewing his contract, they phrased it as, you know, Bruce Arians is retiring. Arians quickly kind of dispelled that notion not long after the Steelers released that statement. He obviously was hired right away by the Indianapolis Colts, became their offensive coordinator. That was Andrew Luck's rookie season. And, you know, it goes on from on and on from there. Now, obviously, this has been, what, over 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and we still tend to talk about this from time to time. Bruce said that in so many words that he thought that it was, you know, he believes the style of offense that he ran, combined with his perceived close relationship at that time with quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, is what ultimately resulted in him not receiving a new contract. And then he added it in this little gem, and we didn't run the ball enough. And I think if you go back and look at statistically, I think Arians did run the ball enough. I just don't think he ran the ball enough in certain situations, you know, to you know, what Art Rooney, you know, and the Rooney family wanted him to do. So, yeah, I think if you were even to compare some of the percentage snaps of runs versus pass, you know, even to what you know Todd Haley's done the last couple of years, you would probably find that those Arians Steelers ran the ball a higher percentage mm-hmm. at a time. But it's all water underneath the bridge. That sounds like Arians is over it and has been over it for a while, but his wife, maybe not so much.
Yeah, she said she didn't take the news well. Yeah, people get, you know, I like Bruce Arians, and I can...
I never apologize for being an Arians
fan. Right.
And never have, and took a lot of heat during that mm-hmm. time, too, saying, wondering if that was a big mistake.
Yeah,
carry on.
Yeah, no, I did, too. I remember I was floating around on message boards and stuff and say this and that, and people would always get on me. But it doesn't have to be mutual exclusive. You can like Arians. I like Arians. But I can also recognize that probably getting rid of Bruce Arians might be the best thing for Ben Roethlisberger that's ever been done for him. You know, having that relationship with Todd Haley where it wasn't as friendly, and you build the guy up and you kind of tweak him a little bit and make him a much better player. So it's weird the way the Steelers have handled some of these situations with Dick LeBeau and Bruce Arians. It's been a little chaotic and a little confusing, which is it's kind of weird for a franchise that is so stable. But, you know, that's what happened, and it worked out for all parties, so that's important. But just real quick to point out, I mean, I'm just reading the article you had written, Dave, and Arians, for whatever it's worth, says that, you know, he had retired. He says, but again, time heals all things. I had retired, legitimately retired. So if that's apparently true, so the Steelers statement putting it out there saying that he retired would, I guess, in theory be true.
Yeah, but he would have, like I wrote, it's semantics there, mm-hmm. and it's something that we're going to be, you know, we'll talk about probably for another 4 years from time to time as well, too. Did he retire? Did he get fired? I think it's obvious he wasn't going to, quote-unquote, retire.
Right.
If the Steelers would have got him, you know, a contract,
the team he retired, so the team acted in good faith and honestly when they put out the statement saying that he had retired.
Right, absolutely. And, I don't know, if you go back though and read some of those quotes Arians had not soon after mm-hmm. that, you know, of course he probably didn't know he was going to get another job right away with the Colts, yada yada. But you know, the one myth I think associated with Bruce Arians that I've disproved several times was everybody wants to think about bubble screens when it, you know, mm-hmm. that's the easy lazy narrative to throw at Bruce Arians. But you know, back then, those, you know, if you're gaining 4, 5, 6, 7 yards a time, mm-hmm. You know, as Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin and other offensive coordinators have often referred it to, as a run game alternative, you know, mm-hmm. and I think people are a little bit, I think they've got their facts wrong when they look at the overall numbers of that. You know, sometimes that's on a quarterback as well, too, noticing, recognizing how many guys are in the box mm-hmm. and switching. I mean, you look at the RPO the Steelers use now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
same idea.
Same idea, and that screen's in there, right? Mm-hmm. In a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think it's you know, I envision it as a message board bully getting his way somewhere along the line, and several of the sheep following him, and how that kind of narrative picked up steam there. But make no mistake that a lot of times, I mean, look, you need screens, you know, associated with it, and not all the times that a screen is run is it necessarily a design play. It's a lot of times part of an RPO where a quarterback sees certain things and makes, you know, that's, you know, one of three things that he could probably do on a certain play. So look, I think it's worked out great for Bruce Arians, obviously, mm-hmm. and quite honestly, I'm rooting for a Steelers-Cardinals Super Bowl this year. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love to see it, and hopefully we do.
And I think, when is that supposed to air? The 22nd?
Did you write it in the post? Because I wouldn't know otherwise.
I don't think I did, but it's going to be on HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. I want to say that it's the 20th or 22nd, sometime this week. And I, as you mentioned, I've got the video portion of the interview up on Steelers Depot right now.
And there was another great conversation. There's a couple things that will create a firestorm of comments on Steelers Depot there. Brandon Boykin, Antoine Blake, and anything offensive coordinator related. You can just guarantee it.
Absolutely. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about here? We already hit on a little bit about Alan Faneuf is going to be joining the Steelers in training camp this year. That's good news. I guess kind of reading in between the lines of something Bob Labriola wrote on the Steelers site this past week, I kind of, you know, am thinking that the Steelers are trying to get him, maybe hopefully get him on the staff this year past training camp. So we'll have to see how that goes. Now, obviously, Sean Sarrett is the team's kind of offensive assistant, and he's more really, I guess that's a fancy way of being called an offensive line assistant, because that's, you know, I envision that's, you know, that's his background, A, and B, you would think with those kind of numbers, that would be the kind of the help that Mike Munchak would need. So we'll have to keep an eye on that moving forward here.
Your 2017 salary cap you'd put out, right? And all good news?
Yeah, all good news on that, you know, and look, whenever you're looking this far ahead, you know, as far as salary cap pictures go, it's very, very hard to do because, you know, as of right now, as of people listening to this, the Steelers have 43 players under contract for the 2017 season, and there's a good bet that, let's see, a third of these guys, if not more, aren't going to be on the roster, you know, come the start of the regular season. You know, a few of them might make it to the practice squad, but I mean, when you look at the bottom end of these, you know, with all these undrafted free agents who are currently under contract for next season, a lot of these guys aren't going to be there. But regardless, you're able to kind of fill in the holes because if they're not there, there's going to be some lower salary guys there to take their place. So when you take into account that 43 players on the roster, what I did was I went ahead and projected 7 draft picks for next year at a – Total salary, including cap hits, being roughly around $6.5 million. That gives me a little bit of buffer there. I went ahead and already projected David DeCastro, Le'Veon Bell, and Lawrence Timmons all getting contract extensions between now and the start of the of this regular season. Will that happen? I'm not 100% sure, but I think I went ahead and put a nice buffer in there for each player, assuming that that did happen, that each player will have a cap hit in 2017 of $9 million each. And I can see where that already raised some eyebrows in the comments of that post. But, like I said, I want to provide a buffer here to work with. Will all three of them have cap hits of $9 million? Probably not. But, I mean, one could. Two could, maybe, but I think that provides a nice buffer, in there. When you get all that done, the Steelers are still, roughly, what do I have there? $18 million under a projected cap of $167 million next offseason. And keep in mind, that's not taken into account any cap money that they would have left over in 2016 that they may or may not want to roll over. Remember, teams do not have to roll over cap space. And you would, if you're wondering why they wouldn't, it goes into that whole cap floor, have to spend 89%, in cash, that whole thing, as part of the CBA. So that would be the only reason as to why the Steelers wouldn't want to roll over any salary cap space as far as that goes. But, I mean, it's hard to project that this far out. There's a whole Sean Swisham thing. Currently, he's under contract for 2017, and that nearly $2.5 million base salary sticks out like a sore thumb when you look at that list. Now, another thing, when looking kind of ahead to 2017, I think, and I mentioned this in the post, you're going to have two really big elephants in the room that you're going to have to address extension wise. That being Antonio Brown and Stephon Tuitt. Even with that amount of cap space that I projected the Steelers to have at $18 million, let's say I was off on that by $3 million, and they only have $15 million under the cap to work with when all free agents are signed that they want to sign, for leftover from this year. They're still going to have plenty of cap space to work with when it comes to Antonio Brown and Stephon Tuitt. I think people are already asking, well, why can't you get Stephon Tuitt done this year? That's a rule in the CBA, folks, that you have to wait until after a player's third year, a drafted player, third year, to extend his contract. You cannot touch a four-year, a rookie's four-year contract until after the third season when it goes to extending him. So that was, in part of the new CBA agreement several years ago. So I don't know how other to paint this right now other than, A, I will be surprised if the Steelers have to restructure any contracts next offseason. And my, this team really looks in great shape cap-wise, and this is even projecting guys like DeCastro, Bell, and Timmons getting nice deals this offseason.
Well, yeah, that was the last point I was going to make out to you, Dave, is that, even if you're not a cap guru like you are, Dave, I'm certainly not. I'm sure most of people listening are not. I think you can usually get a feel for where, the Steelers are in a good or bad place cap-wise, based on whether or not they have to restructure contracts, and they haven't this year. And like you said, Dave, they aren't looking like it for next year. So that kind of tells you that this team's in a whole lot better place cap-wise now than what they were in the past. And so that's kind of your good indication in a very general sense of if the Steelers are in a good place cap-wise or not, and that shows that they are.
And, after this season, a guy like Ryan Shazier, it's a big season for Ryan Shazier because the Steelers have to decide what next offseason, whether or not they're going to pick up his fifth-year option as well. So,
any idea on what that might cost? Are we talking $10 million, $8 million like Jarvis this year? Any projection for that?
Yeah, it's probably going to be in the $10 million or more range right around in there, and that's just a best guess. Yeah. I talked to Joe Corey recently on Twitter, and he expects the cap to increase by at least 8% in 2017. So I think it's still a tad, you know, a bit early, but I mean, that roughly, that's about what the number, you know, I can't foresee it being much more than 10 or 11 million, you know, as far as Ryan Shazier goes. So the good news, you know, you got Ben Roethlisberger, you know, right now still kind of in the early stages of his new deal, and the fact that you're not having to restructure his contract is huge. You got a guy like Cameron Hayward that you could certainly go, you know, go to and get money from as part of a restructure. You're not having to do that. I think in a somewhat related article talking about salary cap is something that Jeremy Fowler wrote about at the end of last week, and that's talking about the amount of guaranteed money, mm-hmm. or the lack of, that the Steelers have paid out so far this off season. And this is always, you know, I wish these guys would put the parameters in there a little bit better, mm-hmm. you know, as far as what they're considering guaranteed money is, because obviously you have players that are receiving guaranteed money this year as part of their contracts that, you know, guaranteed is guaranteed, right. Whether it be your base salary, whether it be roster bonus, on and on. Reading in between the lines of what Jeremy Fowler wrote, it seems like he's talking about signing bonus money doled out by all teams across the league so far this offseason. And, you know, heading into this article, he had the Steelers as ranked 32nd or last in the league, or first in the league, however you want to look at it, with a low number of almost 14.8 million. However, as I broke down in this post, if you go through all the signing bonuses that the Steelers have actually given out so far this offseason, I come up with almost 19.8 million, which is roughly 5 million more than what Jeremy has them down for. This obviously they probably could be waiting on some signing bonus amounts of some of these draft picks coming in. But even so, I think the best way to kind of look at a list such as this, I mean, this looks great on paper. Boy, the Steelers mm-hmm. haven't paid out a whole lot of guaranteed money this offseason, but I think you really have to look at this over a course of, you know, four or five seasons. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you just go back to last offseason, the Steelers gave Ben Roethlisberger a $31 million signing bonus. You know, right. So I think timing, I think it all depends on who you have upcoming, how active you are in free agency. Of course, the Steelers are not generally active in free agency, outside free agency. That was, again, the case this offseason. And generally, when they re-sign some of their own unrestricted free agents, you know, that they get them to really friendly type deals, such was the case with Ramon Foster, William Gay, Robert Golden this offseason as well, too. So, you know, I'm more excited about my post about the mm-hmm. Steelers 2017 salary cap picture than I was kind of recapping what Jeremy Fowler had to say about this past offseason, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And you're right, you know, financials, you know, salary cap, they can't be looked in a vacuum. You have to look at it, you know, long term. You know, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, maybe not 10 years, but you get the idea. Like, I'll give you a really terrible example of how I relate to this idea. Whenever I was growing up, I'd play Madden and I had my franchise mode. And for the first 1 or 2 years, you know, I'd have all these big contracts and I'd sign all these great guys and everything would be perfect. And then the salary cap, my space started to go into the red, and I would give up after like year 4 because I had no way to re-sign guys, and my roster was a mess, and I ruined the whole Pittsburgh Steelers, and it broke my heart. So that's how I look at it. Is you got to look at, you know, salary cap long term. What is your plan, not just in a year to year kind of scope.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've heard Kevin Colbert talk about this in the past, you know, how you really got to project, what, three, four years out, yeah. Sometimes of where you're going to be. You're going to have to project where you think the cap's going to be at the same. And all teams have to go through this. Some do a better job than others. And the fact that the Steelers have been able to stay competitive throughout, really, you know, forever, it seems like, You know, especially since Kevin Colbert has been with the Steelers since 2000. And the fact that you've had a franchise quarterback in there, you know, get multiple deals, that's what makes it hard, is any team who doesn't have a franchise quarterback can go out there and spin, and really hope to kind of hit oil, if you will, with a rookie quarterback, so to speak, or a free agent quarterback. But, I mean, just go back and look at the quarterbacks who have won the last, whatever, you see the stat all the time, the last 10, 15 Super Bowls, and, that's what it's about, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about who wins the Super Bowls, and when you go back and look at the quarterbacks who have won it, teams that have won it, it's generally teams that have the franchise guys.
Yeah, you either have a franchise quarterback or you're looking for one. Those are the two ones. There's no third option. That's what every situation. That's how you can basically define almost every team. It's just they have a franchise guy, they have a chance to compete, or they don't have one, and they're going to need a lot of help. They're going to struggle, and they're looking for one of those guys. So that's the name of the game. Everybody knows it. It's just it's a little bit of random luck, and that's kind of what makes it fun.
And look, I mean, every team, I think if you were to balance it out over time with the injuries and bad luck, so to speak, I think. It's hard to say one's more snake bitten than the other, but you could quickly find the teams that go out there and try to make a splash in free agency and it doesn't work and it bites them, and then it can, depending on how you manage signing bonuses and the cap and everything. I mean, you can really hurt a franchise for 2 years out real quick. Now you can quickly recover on the flip side, because the way the cap the way these things escalate real quick when you cut a player with dead money, I mean, you can quickly crawl out of it, but you better be drafting well along the way, and you better be sure when you go out in free agency and you hit some of these guys. But I just think it's a testament overall the way Omar Khan and the Steelers run this thing. Have they made some bad contract decisions in the past? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. People are going to point back to the whole Cortez Allen thing, a few years ago now. They'll easily try to point back to, the Willie Colon contract, mm-hmm. the Lamar Woodley contract. And I'll still defend the Lamar Woodley contract to the cows come home, because at the time, there was no sign. I mean, Lamar Woodley was worth every dime that he got when he got it from the Steelers. It's just unfortunate that really the injury started hitting, and it really didn't. Maybe his off-season program wasn't where it should have been after that.
Yeah, I remember that day really, really well. Everyone was so happy, and there was hardly any naysayers on the internet, which is rare when there's not the naysayer. So it's hard to blame that. But yeah, they've done a great job. They've had, some tight cap situations, but, the teams that are going to be super competitive are the ones that are going to really spend money and be aggressive and sign up their guys long term. I mean, I think we talked about this before, Dave, and I'll just make this my last point before we move on to the defensive line outlook. But, what were the major free agents the Steelers have ever really let walk since the last 10 years? I mean, Keenan Lewis, Emmanuel Sanders, those aren't
Mike Wallace.
Yeah, but I mean, none of those are franchise-changing guys, and all of them, you could say that they, in hindsight, were pretty good decisions. Mike Wallace was clearly a good decision. You take Antonio Brown over Wallace. Keenan Lewis, you would have liked to have him come back, but we know he's got his own injury problems down in New Orleans. And Emmanuel Sanders having a nice career in Denver, but again, the Steelers receiver core has been fantastic, so it's hard to really blame them at all. So. I mean, there's not really been that one, Moby Dick white whale that got away that you really wish that had stayed.
And very rarely, anyway, when the Steelers let guys walk in during free agency, normally a large cross section of them don't end up signing deals, until maybe after and by deals, you know, I'm talking about lucrative deals. Usually a lot of the free agents end up signing those 1 year, you know, minimum salary benefit type deals, and even from there on out, a lot of them don't end up making the 53-man roster wherever they go at all. So, but you know, this offseason was, you know, we saw a lot more action, whereas Steelers, you know, free agents go. But I mean, there's the age old thing that we talk about all the time. You can't sign them all, yeah. You know.
And that was just the volume of it. I mean, they Steelers got back the guys that you wanted to get back. The only one that really didn't is Steve McClendon, to me.
Absolutely, and I guess, you know, one other thing I wanted to hit on, you know, real quick, talking about the cap before we get on talking about defensive line here. Why is Lawrence Timmons the most polarizing defensive starter the Steelers have right now?
From a financial standpoint,
just all the way around.
His play doesn't polarize me. I mean, I know what I'm getting from Timmons on the field.
I'm not talking from you and me. I'm talking from the rest of the fan base. It seems like the guy, a lot of the fan base is ready to just take this guy out to pasture and shoot him.
I've seen some of those people, but I think generally speaking, people like Timmons, and there's not much criticism against him.
Would you pay Timmons $7 million? Do you have problems paying Timmons $7 million this season?
No, I wouldn't at all. And even knowing that he's probably going to continue to lose some snaps in that dime defense, keeping Shazier out there. No, I mean, even knowing that Shazier kind of makes a lot of the calls and stuff, but Timmons is the guy that's always going to be in the right spot. The guy could still move. I mean, remember, he played the first month plus last year with a turf toe injury that hindered him. But, you know, I was going back and watching tape on some other guys. You just see Timmons fly around the field sideline to sideline, still a big hitter. There isn't much that he can't do, and he's a reliable guy. He's at practice all the time, rarely misses. Again, last year was kind of a weird exception because of the turf toe injury. But, I mean, he's played, 15, at least 15 starts in each of the last, I don't even know how many years it's been, forever now. You don't get that kind of durability too often, and I think sometimes we take it for granted.
Now, he's set to make $8.75 million this year, and right now that's the final year of his current contract. Let me ask you this. Do you have problems with him earning $7 million next season?
Well,
2017.
I'm going to give you the non-answer here, but I guess it would depend on what happens this year. But currently, as we stand today, no, I don't.
Well, if you had to make a decision now, which, you know, they're going to have to make, he and the Steelers are going to probably, I still think something like this gets done. But let's say he stands firm on the fact that he wants to make $7 million over the course of the next two seasons. You know, talking 2017 and 2018. Do you sign up for that?
If I had to make the decision right now.
Right, and keep in mind that that such a deal would not include new bonus money. It would basically be an effort to lock him up long term. In other words, a Heath Miller, Troy Polamalu deal, where you're going to take a large portion of this 8.75 that he's going to make this year. You turn that into a signing bonus. Mm-hmm. You add let's add 2 years onto the contract. Let's say he makes $7 million in 2017 and $8 million in 2018, and the only bonus money involved is money that he's already scheduled to earn.
Yeah, I'd do it as long as I still feel like, you know, 2 years from now I could still get out of the deal just in case something happens. But
you could probably, I mean, realistically, I mean, let's say you turn. $6,000 of this year's base salary into a signing bonus, and you could only if you're only adding 2 years, you can only prorate that to three years of the deal. So you're adding on $2 million onto each of the year or $2 million onto the additional years. Talking about 2017, 2018. In addition to, you have to prorate that in 2016 as well, too. Now, you would obviously be able to lower his cap number this year in a move such as that. And let's say you gave him base salaries of $7 million in 2017, and you gave him a base salary of $8 million in 2018. His cap hits in both those years would be $9 million and $10 million. And that's where I came up with – you kind of seen where I came up with that $9 million in my projection there. Now, granted, if he had a horrible 2016 season and you wanted to cut him, you could make him – you know, after the 2016 season was over, you could make him a post-June 1st cap hit or cap casualty. He would cost, you know, you would essentially save his $7 million base salary that you were going to pay him. He would be a, there would still be a $2 million dead money hit in 2017 and $2 million dead money hit in 2018. So, I mean, you, in my opinion, it's a no-brainer, and you do that.
Yeah, because even if you didn't want to do post-June 1st, you still save $3 million next year, wouldn't you? 7 and 4?
Yeah, if you had that whole $4 million in proration hit, and you agreed to give him a $7 million base salary, I mean, you're still saving $3 million.
Yeah, that's how you make a deal. You know, you get a guy to come back at a lower cost, but you still know you can get out of it if you have to. That's just smart business. So, sure, I don't think it was a great case. And this is a guy that really, you know, me, that really likes Vince Williams, but not at the expense of Lawrence Timmons.
Yeah, I just don't understand. You know, people are now just trying to chisel him away as a two, you know, talking about Lawrence Timmons as a two-down linebacker. And, okay, let's say he is a two-down linebacker this year and that he only plays, I don't know, give me a percentage of the snaps, 75%?
Yeah, if they go to this dime, he'll probably play about 75, 80%.
I mean, to me, for what he does when he's on the field and the leadership, the kind of guy that he is, he's worth, you know, the 8.7 he's going to make this year and $7 million in the future. I get irritated when people just want to throw him on the scrap heap right now. One guy in the comments says, you know, the only way I keep Timmons is if he'll accept the vet minimum.
I saw your comment back.
I mean, come on, guys. I mean, let's be realistic here. All right, enough of that soapbox there. Let's move forward and talk about the Steelers, you know, potential or the players on the 90-man roster. We're going to kind of go position group with this thing, and no better place to start, in my opinion, than defensive line. Leading the way, of course, Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt, who, if things go as planned this year, one would think that they're probably going to play maybe 10% less snaps this year, right?
Oh, that's what I've been saying for, since like, October last year when I started my Doosable rant, who signed with the Bills, and it makes me very sad. So, you know, if you can get them at about 80%, I'm a really happy camper. I mean, hey, you know, a lot of snaps last year. I think Hayward played, I forget the number off the top of my head, 1,100, 1,150 last year. Tuitt would have been about the same had it not been for the injury that caused him to miss two games. If you look at the games in which he played, the snap count, it was close to 90% as well. I love those guys. Hayward's a star to me. He's, in terms of who's underrated league-wide, I think Cam Hayward's driving that bus. I don't understand how, you know, and I know these are just lists by other people with opinions that are, you know, worth as much as you and mine, but I don't know how he gets overlooked so much in every single list. It feels like, I feel like, you know, Pro Football Focus is one place where I see them do their list for top 101 players and this and that, and Hayward just never seems to even get a sniff there. I don't understand that at all. And Tuitt's, you know, going to be, I think, in that same place coming up real quick. His acceleration or his progress has been accelerated more than it was Hayward. Part of that's because of opportunity scheme a little bit as well. But Tuitt's done a great job making progress in such a short amount of time. So you're going to get those snaps down a little bit, but they're still going to be two great players in this league.
I definitely think Hayward is a top 100 player in this league league wide. I don't think I would be accused of too much bias going there. Tuitt is outside the 100 in my opinion.
After this year, I think he jumps into it just like Hayward.
Right. If there's ever a player this season that just could really, really blow up at Stephon Tuitt.
Yeah, remember that start he had last year? Then the injury kind of dogged him a little bit. I mean, it was unreal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was he was trending in the right direction before spraining that knee, most definitely.
Yeah, that 49ers game, I mean, he just destroyed those guards.
And it'll be interesting. I mean, he one would think there's no reason not to think that he's going to take the next step forward. Where, if anywhere, could both of these guys improve? Where would it be?
Hayward, I don't have one. I mean, I know Hayward will tell you he's got to do this better. I think he mentioned a comment about using his hands better in an interview during OTAs. But I'm not going to try to nitpick Cam Hayward to it. You know, I'm doing that one step to take series, and I'm going to get to the defensive line here coming up. So I haven't gotten to it yet. You probably, and this is just speaking very broadly, a little bit in his run defense, you know, staying strong at the point of attack, maybe even maintaining his run, you know, gap integrity. I think there's still minor things, but, you know, the thing I love about them the most, though, and there's so much to love about both those guys, is their effort and their hustle. I don't know of any other defensive lineman that hustle as much and as often and as well as Cam Hayward and Stephon do it, and it's infectious for the rest of that group.
All right, let's. I mean, both of those guys could be Pro Bowlers.
They are to me right now. Even to it right now, I think he played at a Pro Bowl level last year.
Is there a chance? And I think is there a chance a guy like Hayward makes All Pro?
He should, but I don't know if he will. I know it's a lot of competition. You know, I mean, J.J. Watt's going to have a spot every single year till he retires. You got Wilkerson and Leonard Williams, a lot of those guys up in the Jets. I think Hayward definitely should do it. I think Tua could at least be in the conversation. I mean, man, that Denver game, I think it was the Week 15, not the playoff game, that interception to what Shazier had, go back and watch that and watch the club and the punch that Tua gets on the right guard, I think. You want a glimpse of what players can do. That's what Tua can do, and he does it consistently.
Let's see. Daniel McCullers right now looks to be slated to be the team's base nose tackle. It'll be interesting to see how much playing time he gets outside of the base. You and I aren't known as big Daniel McCullers fans. I think there is some stuff we have on tape his ability to push the pocket when he wants to, when he uses that leverage of his, well, he can push the pocket. He can one and two gap against the run well enough. He obviously, in my opinion, needs to stay square more at the point of attack. Sometimes you'll see him just get pushed a little bit out, too far out of the hole at times in defending against the run. And as we've talked about several times with Daniel McCullers, the way he's able to now play laterally against, you know, some outside zone schemes is going to be key this year. And also his overall just recognition of what he's seeing in front of him just has to improve, not only against the run, but as a pass rusher. What did I miss there?
Not much. Football is all about hands and eyes. And I think McCullers has to improve in both those areas, and you really hit on it. I think the big thing, and this has been mentioned many times by the players and ex-players, Joe Green is the one that comes to mind, but, you know, you just want to see the mentality change a little bit for McCullers. He's kind of a teddy bear. I want him to just be a bear and be nasty out there and be a little bit more physical and aggressive, and Hayward's talked about how he needs to kind of be more vocal, and they have to kind of pry it out of him sometimes, and Hayward had said, or I think it was one of them, Hayward or McCullers, actually it was Cam, who said, you know, as a starting nose tackle, you set the front, and everyone adjusts off of you, so you have to be vocal. When you go into Baltimore, you go into Cleveland, you go into Cincinnati this year, Dave, it's going to be loud in there, even when the opposing team's on offense and things are a little bit quieter. You got to be vocal. You got to get after it at home even then, thinking about that, just kind of, you know, thinking out loud here. Fans are going to be going crazy. It's the fourth quarter. It's a big first, you know, series here. It's first and 10. The Bengals have the ball at their 20. Fans are going crazy. McCullers has to be loud and vocal and set that front. So you got to have him be more aggressive out there and really take charge of that. I think you've seen some good things from McCullers. We pointed it out. But, you asked me a couple weeks ago, do I have confidence in McCullers? No, just because you really haven't seen it enough on a consistent basis.
And, I mean, I wrote about it a few times this offseason about how in his first 2 years in the league, the Steelers just haven't had confidence in him to put him out on that field in sub-package situations. And when he has been out there, it hasn't been meaningful situations at all. I'll believe it when I see it this year.
Yeah, I don't really expect them to make a ton of noise in sub-package, you know, just because there's other great options, or better options out there now that you add Javon Hargrave. You sign Ricardo Matthews. You have Hayward and Tuitt. Those are four guys that are better sub-package options to me than McCullers. So, you know, I don't think about that a ton. He might get some, and hopefully if he does, he gets some one-on-one matchups, and he can be able to create some interior pressure, collapse at A-gap. But for me, the big starting point and the thing I really care about the most is what he does in the 30% of the time he'll play nose tackle and plays that one tech, and what he can do, you know, there. That's his big calling card.
When the season is over, will Daniel McCullers have played more or less than 33% of the team's total defensive snaps?
That's a good question. I'm going to say they played 30% base. What was it last year? I think 27% base last year. I'll say a little bit less. I'll say he plays around that 27 to 30% tops.
I'm with you. I'm going to take the under on that as well, too. A guy that we really haven't talked a lot about this offseason, a guy that I'm kind of excited to hear you report on during training camp this year, Ricardo Matthews. Now, I know you've already done your tape mm-hmm. breakdown on him after he was signed. Here and there I'll get some moments and go back and try to look at some of his work. More work, especially against the run, as a member of the Chargers. When you statistically scout this guy, which is obviously a bad thing to do, but I think when you go and try to match kind of that up on the film, I think I was a bit surprised to see how well he actually played against the run. Is this something that he... Are we looking more at Ricardo Matthews? In other words, I guess, are we saying, well, Ricardo Matthews was brought in more to be more of a nickel kind of defender, whereas maybe we should be talking about Ricardo Matthews being a guy that you feel a little bit more confident throwing out there against the run in the base than, say, a guy like Cam Thomas was?
Yeah, no, he'll be better than Cam Thomas. He's a better athlete. He moves better laterally. But, you know, the bar is not that high when we're talking about Cam Thomas. We recognize with San Diego, he was basically a nickel guy. You know, rarely was playing as a five-tech, playing as an end in that base defense. He would usually come in, you know, sub-package situations, third down, and try to get after the quarterback. You know, I'm looking at my report again just to kind of refresh my memory, Dave. You know, he's not an innately strong guy, but I think he plays with, you know, good technique, comes off the ball quick. It doesn't matter if you're strong. If you can't fire off the ball quick and get a good punch and establish leverage, you're going to get pushed around. That's another one of McCullers' issues, going back to him real quick. But, you know, Matthews has some decent chase. He's a good athlete. He can flow versus zone schemes, which is, you know, the big bugaboo that Cam Thomas had. I'm curious to see, you know, I'm assuming Matthews is going to play some five tech or at least some end, you know, but usually it's kind of the four eye shaded, you know, inside shoulder of the tackle. But, you know, we don't really know for sure, I guess, exactly how it'll be used and hopefully more than just some nickel stuff. So, you know, I'm going to be interested in to see how he's used this year, because you're still not totally sure of that.
Yeah, I think, and kind of what I was trying to get to was the fact that I'm looking forward to seeing him play some 4-eye or some 5, mm-hmm. During training camp and the preseason, and specifically how he does against the run in those situations.
He's a shorter guy. He's only, I think, 6'2".
Yeah, 6'2", 6'3". I'm willing to bet he probably tips the scales a little bit more than that 300 as well, too. A guy that really, you know, it's kind of hard to evaluate. Kashad Lyons is a guy that we'll really get a better idea of through training camp and the preseason. I know a lot of fans are maybe high on this guy for the sheer fact that he was with, you know, on the practice squad all of last season. You know, it's a numbers thing with him, and as we sit here right now, I just can't see Kashad Lyons making this 53, and it's very rare for a guy to double over multiple years into the practice squad, right?
Yeah, let me put on my tinfoil hat here for a second, Dave, and I think actually it was a commenter on Depot when Cam Hayward was talking about the defensive line the other day. He did not mention Lyons at all. He mentioned Matthews. He mentioned Walton. I think he mentioned Hargrave and, you know, Tuitt, obviously, McCullers. But no mention of Kashad Lyons. So take that for what you will, but that does not Hayward's almost a spokesperson for the team sometimes, and to not get mentioned is not a good sign, at least.
Yeah, you know, definitely, just a guy, limited stuff for us to go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean,
he got signed at last cuts last year, so I mean, it's not like I never really knew anything about him. Small school kid, Tampa Bay, was with them. I had watched him a little bit in the preseason, but you know, I'm coming in with a clean slate. But he's got quite the uphill battle.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of Tusculum tape running around.
go ask Ricardo Coakley, see what he's up to.
We've talked a lot already about the young draft pick, talking about Javon Hargrave, a guy that, you know, best suited to play, you know, one tech nose tackle, defensive tackle, and then additionally, we talked about it all offseason, how the Steelers needed to find a multi kind of use player that not only can play defensive tackle in the base, but can give you some snaps in sub package situations as a defensive tackle. Once again, it's easier to scout Javon Hargrave off of stats than it is off of tape, because the sheer fact that there's not a lot of South Carolina State tape running around either. But a guy that we both feel comfortable, probably first quarter of the season, probably going to push Daniel McCullers for snaps in that sub package defense, but quite possibly the nose tackle in snaps as well in the base.
Yeah, you know, maybe this was a little knee jerk from me whenever right after the draft happened, but you know, I tweeted out that I think, you know, Hargrave can have the biggest impact of any of these rookies, and I might have come down on that a little bit, but I still think he can. And even if McCullers dominates the snaps at nose tackle, I think Hargrave definitely has a role already carved out in sub-package football to spell, you know, Hayward and Tuitt, like we've talked about. And I think he can make an impact there when he can just get after the quarterback, you know, go into that pass rush mode, doesn't have to think as much, and can kind of just play. And that might be the best thing for a small school kid coming out of the FCS level. So I think that's going to be where he's going to thrive. And I think he could have a real tangible impact this year.
A guy that quite possibly might not get a helmet right away, or do you think he's going to get a helmet?
No, I think he will, just because if you're looking at the depth chart, I mean, you need another nose tackle, and Hargrave is going to play there to some extent. And so if McCullers ever went down in-game, you know, you need somebody else, and I don't think Ricardo Matthews is going to be up to that billing. So, no, I think Hargrave will be active from the get-go unless something terribly wrong happens.
I agree. He'll be lucky to play still, even with that said. 25% of the team's defensive snaps as a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought about it, I guess, too much for a while. But, yeah, it sounds about right.
Now, a guy, people are going to say, well, how come you guys are skipping over LT Walton here? Another guy that, quite honestly, we don't know much about outside of his tape at Central Michigan. A guy who didn't play many snaps for the Steelers last year. When he did play, most notably in the game against the Chiefs when Stephon Tuitt was down, I remember thinking, boy, LT Walton sure is on the ground a bunch.
Yeah, that's common, though, for rookies. I was already thinking about that when I do my one step to take. It'll probably be stay on your feet, just like it was for Jarvis Jones. But, you know, in terms of, you know, who got glowing reports out of the spring, I don't know if you saw any of them, Dave, but LT Walton had a lot of people, to, you know, singing his praises. And I think Hayward kind of mentioned it as well. He's in, you know, apparently a lot better shape, which is what you would expect for a guy going into his second year. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, if you care about OTA reports and take those with a grain of salt, he had himself a nice spring.
This is a guy we expect to see play a lot of snaps during the preseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Hayward Tuitt, you know, go hang out by the water cooler, my friends. Let's see what LT Walton can do. He's going to be like the Landry Jones, play the most snaps of any defensive lineman ever.
And like with any defensive lineman, young defensive lineman, things kind of we're going to be looking for is, can he stay square? Mm-hmm. Can he stay on his feet is the big thing with me, I think, right now. More than anything, give me those kind of two things, and the obvious that John Mitchell run after the football type thing is something that he really needs to do.
And as a pass rusher, you want to see him get after the quarterback, but I want to see him maintain, you know, rush lane integrity when you go into some of these stunts, and you might not see it as much in the preseason, but still a little. You know, does he contain on some of these stunts? Does he lose his gap? Does he get washed down and create a scramble lane for the quarterback? Those are big no-nos, and they're not always obvious, but they're obvious to John Mitchell and Keith Butler and Mike Tomlin. So as a pass rusher, you know, your rush lane integrity is critical to a good pass rush.
as we sit here kind of winding this down quickly, the also-rans, the guys that are on the roster, we don't expect to make the final 53-man roster barring injury, but one of these guys, maybe two of them, can make the practice squad. I think the list, for the most part, is led by Giorgio Newberry, in your mind and in my mind, would be at the top of the list. Johnny Maxey, a good effort kid, but a small school kid, really going to have a tough time, I think, making this roster. And then obviously the same goes for a guy like LaVon Hooks, who's more of a defensive nose tackle, if you will, out of Mississippi. And then a kind of closing out that group, Devontae Sigler out of Jacksonville State is another kind of undersized defensive tackle, if you ask me. And then a guy that we know a little bit about already, Roy Phelan, out of Louisville, really doesn't have, in my opinion, much of a shot at this roster. Would Newberry lead the list, in your opinion, right here?
Yeah, to me, looking back at his Florida State tape, he's a big kid, a long kid. He's an athlete. He played a little bit of tight end for Florida State. His production wasn't great. He was kind of a bit of a rotational guy. But, yeah, I thought he, in a weak UDFA class, and now especially now that a guy like, Tyreek McCord has done for the year, I think Newberry's probably the best UDFA to look at. You could say the Severin receiver from Virginia as well, but I think his path is pretty crowded to try to make noise. Roy Phelan. I don't know why he's back. He was my man crush. There's always that one guy that kind of tries to scrap around, but it was just weird for the Steelers to bring him back. I don't know if he has a friend inside or something, but he's back. Hooks was with Green Bay last year. Sigler, had some talent. He had a better 2014 than he had last year. So there's a couple of guys that, were highly rated prospects. Hooks actually, I think, was a big prospect coming out of high school. So maybe there's a little bit of intrigue there. Maxey, Mars Hill tape is impossible to find. So we'll see if anyone can make some noise. Effort and staying on your feet, two biggest things for all those guys.
I think I speak for both of us when I say that the Steelers will keep six total defensive linemen this year. We expect it to be Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, Daniel McCullers, the rookie Javon Hargrave, LT Walton, and...
Is it Ricardo Matthews?
And Ricardo Matthews.
I mean, is it impossible that they only keep five?
I would be surprised.
Leave Walton off of it, because Walton's got to earn it, right? I mean, he has to. It's not even.
Well, if there's one spot that's up for discussion, I would think it's Walton's.
Yeah, but if let's say he doesn't earn it, I mean, you don't have, because you're only going to have five active on Sundays, right? You're not going to have six.
Yeah, but yeah, you get somebody fall off the bus or twist an ankle or slip in. I can't remember a time.
No,
when
I know. I'm just saying, because I thought six too, but I think it was somebody in the Ask Alex had made a good point. Could they keep 11 linebackers and only five defensive linemen this year? And I don't think that's out of the question, just knowing all the talent there is at linebacker.
I will be shocked if that happens. I think John Mitchell insists on having six on there. And I think six is a minimum anyway, because look, I mean, anything can happen. I just would be shocked. But I would agree that LT Walton is of all those six that we just mentioned, LT Walton is the less guaranteed of the group. If anybody could push him, let's say a Keshad Lyons, let's say a Giorgio Newberry, let's say a cast off from maybe another team, a guy that's currently on the roster of another team. Probably Ricardo Matthews would be next on that list, but I think there's enough out there and they know enough about Ricardo Matthews that I would be shocked if he doesn't make the 53-man roster. But on the flip side, I'm not going to say, I wouldn't bet my house on it, but I'd bet 98% of my house.
it's nice to have a guy with some experience in the league, some Sunday experience. If hypothetically Matthews didn't make it, I mean, your backups are Hargrave, Walton, and then like Alliance, Newberry. Those are three guys that have played combined, 10 snaps in the league. That's a little uncomfortable, a little unnerving. So I think Matthews, for experience purposes, has a great chance to make this team.
How do you like the potential six this year than the six that they ended the season with last year? There's not much change, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean Steve McClendon and Cam Thomas are out.
Yeah, Matthews, Hargrave are in. I don't know, maybe about the same, maybe a little bit worse? I don't know, because, you know, the McClendon loss really stings, and as much as you didn't like to see Cam Thomas out there, I don't know. You had a downgrade at nose tackle. You got a little bit better at your defensive end depth. I'll let you guys decide whether that's better or worse overall.
Can you boil this down? Can you boil this thing down to Ricardo Matthews versus Cam Thomas? I mean, can you boil it down to
that?
Well,
it depends on what you get from nose tackle. I'm going to really miss Steve McClendon. I think people might not realize it until the first 2 weeks of the season when you get some growing pains with McCullers and or Hargrave. So I think the net loss from McClendon is going to be more than the net gain from adding Ricardo Matthews. So I think, if anything, maybe this group got a little bit worse in the moment, but hopefully long-term, if McCullers develops the way the team hopes and the Hargrave develops the way that we thought and the team hopes, it could be better. But I think in the moment, it's a little bit worse.
And I think you have to look at it, hopefully, in the aspect of another year for McCullers, another year for Walton, another year for Tuitt.
Yeah.
On top of it. And of the guys that you're expecting to make the biggest jump this year, would it be Walton or McCullers?
Hoping and expecting, I guess, are two different things. I mean,
sure.
I'm hoping that both do. I don't have great confidence, I guess, in either. The only one I'm thinking to really make another jump is Tuitt. I just don't know enough about Walton and McCullers, I hope, but I mean, I'm hoping, I'm not expecting anything there, to be honest with you.
Well, the thing is, we hope also that even though some of these guys hope to get Hayward and Tuitt off the field a tad bit more than last season, don't want these guys starting.
No, right. Yeah, you're hoping that they stay healthy. So it's all about the hope. I'm hoping that someone's going to pay off my student loans tomorrow, but I can't expect it. So,
yeah, if we get to a point where these guys are having to play an extended amount of snaps, you know, look at the games when Tuitt was out last year. Yes, they had a guy like McClendon who can't, you know, the age-old saying all along is, well, McClendon can play, you know, a base five tech. Look, he can, but it doesn't mean you want that on a snap-to-snap basis. Mm-hmm. And I think my argument all along was McClendon was a better nose tackle than he was anything else, and I think that was proven last season. And unfortunately, he's now somewhere else, and I'll be interested to watch how he plays, you know, with the Jets this year.
Yeah, last thought, real quick, from me, just to kind of put a bow on what you said. Hayward, too, you better stay healthy all year long. We can't afford to lose you. I don't know, man. It's bad news if something happens.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with that front and the secondary being as young. Mm-hmm. You know, we know you got to stop the run early. You got to put opposing offenses in as many predictable situations as you possibly can. Which way are we going to go position group next podcast?
Do you want to just work our way back and go linebacker?
Yeah, that sounds good. Maybe we'll drill it down outside, okay, inside. Maybe we'll address it.
We'll probably break it down because it'll be too much, because we always get the tangents on other stuff. So let's do like outside linebacker or something next time.
All right, that'll give some folks something to look forward to on Friday. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeders Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex _ Kozora. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Look for around the 1st of July for our donations. Our funding, our GoFundMe account to go up to raise some money for Alex going to training camp this year. And in the meantime, if you want to donate to the show, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and look for that donate button in the navigational bar. Folks, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.